Eastern Cape, Cape Town. My name is Nontantha Ncube Ndaba. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Women, Youth and Persons with Disability. I'm co-chairing this subcommittee with the Honorable Gideon, who is the chairperson of Select Committee on Health and Social Services. Why in Brazil am I traveling? Right, man. The only time that we will check whether the sound is okay or not, it's when Honorable Gillian is speaking. I don't know whether she's out, that's why. Okay, let's continue because she's out. I don't see her now. Okay, I will now hand over to honorable members to introduce themselves, starting with Honorable Mpiti.
Thank you very much, Chair. My name is Luol Mpiti, and I'm a member of this committee. Welcome.
Ngibonge kakhulu sihlalo ngibingelele ku sisi uKarabo igama lami ufikile emasiko ngilunga le committee ngiyabonga.
Sibulele kusihlalo uMbulelo Bhaga olilungu le committee ngoxo.
Ntshabele.
Yeah, thanks, Chairperson. Welcome, Memoale. My name is Elegant Traveling. I'm a member of the subcommittee. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. And good evening, Ms. Muhale. My name is Teliswa Mkweba, the member of the committee.
Okay, thank you, Chair. Okay, honorable members are going to ask you questions, and follow-up questions will be made by the same member or other members. So feel free. I would like to return to the sharper. Because if I would be made, I would not call after boo, boo, boo. So the best thing, you must drink water. And maybe don't switch off that mic. Just leave that mic open like that. Yeah, that one and the one in your laptop there. I think there's a mouse that they are using. But why is that mouse behind the laptop now? Is it not the mouse behind the laptop? Oh, okay. So, okay. Oh, all right. Thank you. Hey, when you are teen, take a chance. Maybe my success is a convention. Shall I make a decision? Yeah. So, everybody is watching you, ne? Even your friends. I would show to exercise saving, but I will share with us. I'm trying to make you relax because I can see your feet the way they are. Go to feel. So, trying to make yourself comfortable. And because the first question is, tell us about yourself. The first question is about yourself. Tell us about yourself. Who are you? Where are you coming from? And why have you applied for this position? And you must convince us on why must we recommend you. Over to you.
Thank you very much, Che. Kina Karabo Mohale. Ke nna Molobedu, ke nna motho wa Mashau, from Jaji in Limpopo. I am a descendant of the Rain Queen. Like many young people, I would have left the village to go to the city for better opportunities and also to further my studies. I then went to the Tshwane University of Technology and I enrolled for a national diploma in marketing. This is where I was exposed to a lot of issues that young women in the main face in institutions of higher learning, sexual harassment, lack of access to reproductive health, human trafficking, rape and rape culture in institutions of higher learning. I then joined a lot of young people who had the same passion to fight for the liberation of young women in institutions of higher learning. I then joined various structures at the university. Through my activism in the political space, I was then deployed as the treasurer of the local SRC at the Pretoria campus. And the year following that, I was deployed to serve as president of the Student Representative Council. Shortly after leaving the university with a BTEC degree in marketing, I joined Standard Bank as a data analyst learner. After Bank, I went to Sanlam as a graduate intern in personal finance. This is where I developed a passion for financial literacy and financial wellness. In 2016, at the age of 24, convocants of the Tshwane University of Technology elected me to represent them in the University Council. I then became one of the youngest members of the University Council, and I served in the governing structure for 3 years until 2019. I served in the Student Services Council, employment conditions, and sat in the panel that interviewed and recommended for the appointment of the Vice-Chancellor of the Tshwane University of Technology, various deputy vice-chancellors, and the registrar. Shortly after leaving the University Council, I was then appointed by the university to serve as a member of the board of the Tshwane Institute for Continuing Education. This is a company university and exists for generational third stream income through various means, short learning programs, commercialization, and continuous professional development. At the current moment, I serve as the chairperson of the board of the Tshwane Institute for Continuing Education. Late last year, I then served as an advisor to the Director General of the World Youth Summit. This was hosted at the University of the Witwatersrand, and it focused on Sustainable Development Goal 4, which speaks to quality education. I also served as the Deputy Director General of the International Southern African Model United Nations. This is a youth-led NGO that focuses on simulations of the United Nations. As of earlier this year, I was then appointed to serve as the Deputy Chairperson of the South African BRICS Youth Association. And it is against this background that I really believe that my passion for fighting against atrocities that young women face in society, as well as the experience that I have in both governments and the financial sector, could really contribute to the National Youth Development Agency.
Thank you very much, Ms. Mohale. Now we know who is Karabo. And then the next question. Chair, do you want to ask a question?
Yes, Chairperson. Ms. Karabo, mine is very short. I've listened to your introduction, and you served on many, many boards, as I could hear, also as a student leader. Now, if we took into account where we are today in this country and the youth unemployment and also all challenges that our youth are facing now during COVID-19, can you tell me what do you think, in the light of all of this, can you contribute to enhance the vision of the NYDA if you will be a successful candidate to serve on the NYDA board?
Thank you very much for the question. Excuse me, my voice is going. As I would have mentioned, I'm very passionate about financial wellness and financial literacy, insofar as young people are concerned. We have experienced a situation in the country, especially in the arts, go into the arts and they earn quite a decent living. By the time they leave the space, they are unable to financially sustain themselves. And I think the skills that I have in terms of financial acumen, I think it's going to be very helpful, especially because the financial sector in the main is one of the major contributors with regards to the GDP. Secondly, I've got a lot of network, as I would have mentioned, that I serve as the deputy chairperson of BRICS. That international exposure is what young people need at the current moment. I think for a very long time we've been inward looking, and instead of looking what the international space can be able to offer young people. I know, for example, that Brazil is quite good in terms of farming. There needs to be acceleration, ensuring that we get young people into the space. I think some of the networks and the rapport that I've built in some of the BRICS countries can really be beneficial in terms of opening access for young people to can be able to empower themselves. Thank you.
It's okay, Chairperson. Welcome, Friday, Mamwalege. It's nice to hear a young person saying that they are passionate about finances, trading, encouraging. I just want to know how will the Public Finance Management Act apply to the NYDA? And what role will the board of the youth organization play? What role will the board of directors play in terms of the PFMA within the NYDA?
Okay. Thank you very much for the question, Honourable Member. The public gives impetus and insight as to how organizations that control or rather manage finances in the public sector should be able to carry themselves. And it raises quite salient principles. It raises an issue of ethical leadership. And when we speak about ethical leadership, we're speaking about people that can be held accountable, people that are very responsible and can be able to ensure that they inspire confidence in society. Secondly, it speaks about effective leadership, that when you are managing public finances, you must be able to ensure that the money that is allocated to you goes to the programs that had been set out in terms of your strategy. Now, what role would the NYDA Board of Directors play in this? They need to be compliant, and I think that's the salient line, that in terms of the Act, members of the Board need to ensure that they are compliant and look into areas within the Public Finance Management Act that they can be able to actually carry through in respect to the responsibilities that they would have been given.
How are you going to ensure compliance?
Oh, sorry, I could have missed that. Oh, thank you.
How are you going to ensure compliance?
Thank you for that. I could have missed it. I do apologize. We ensure compliance by ensuring that in the space that I'm in, we speak to continuous professional development, that members of the board must continuously be empowered and given the information that they need in order for them to be able to fulfill their fiduciary duties. It's extremely imperative that when they are in the board, they are empowered and they are given the knowledge and the expertise that they would require to fulfill their responsibilities as per the Public Finance Management Act.
Okay, because that one was not my question. I was just asking that.
Okay.
Yeah. But what I want to hear from you is that, remember, NYDA resources are not enough or adequate. So in order to complement what they have, what mechanisms do you think you can put in place if it happens that you are being appointed to be one of the board members of NYDA?
Thank you very much for the question. And you are quite correct in as far as the finances of that, of course, are given to the NYDA. I think in terms of ensuring that we respond to the lack of finances within the agency, one of the important things that we need to do is to ensure that we network with various donors. There are a lot of private companies and even individual donors that donate and support various programs. So far as youth development is concerned, there needs to be that concerted effort to build relations so that we get donors on board. And I think that's really the salient point to say that. Insofar as attracting partnerships and attracting various people to contribute towards youth development, we need to build in terms of the network and relationship. And of course, this also speaks to the rapport that the NYDA has. What perception do these private donors or even individuals have? It's important that agents attract various people through the perception that it holds within the society.
Okay. Thank you very much. Honorable Mkweba.
Thank you, Chair. Ms. Mohale, I perused your CV and I then saw that it has a rich work experience. But however, on the SONA 2020 by the President, open quote, government allocates funds to reduce youth employment close quote. So, Ms. Muhale, my question to you, which sectors of the economy must be focused on in order to create jobs and advance youth development to deal with the increased levels of youth unemployment? Thank you.
Thank you very much for the question. In terms of sectors, I will mention just three, and I will explain why I believe these sectors need to be prioritized. One, manufacturing. COVID-19 has shown to us that there is a lack of manufacturing PPEs and ventilators within the country. And if we're able to tap into manufacturing, we already know that there is a demand, there is a market, and therefore if we get young people into the manufacturing sector, then we're able to create employment. And we can be able to reduce in terms of importations from countries like China, and we focus on locally manufactured goods that are manufactured by young people in the country. Secondly, I believe that agriculture plays a very significant part in terms of job creation. Food security becomes a conversation in almost every section in the society. We all need to eat. And the important factor here is that if we all need to eat, then it means that there should be production within the agricultural sector. And I believe that we need to be able to push young people into the agricultural sector. But in the country, we find a situation where young people do not have a place to even farm into a ground sector because of the lack of land. And therefore, it means that Parliament needs to respond rapidly to the question of land redistribution. And finally, ICT sector. COVID-19 has shown that technology is really the new normal. Everything is digitalized, and we need to be able to ensure that we get young people into the digital space as quickly as possible, but also respond to the question of digital divide, to say, when we're speaking about this digital transformation and getting young people into the technological space and ensuring that they produce technology that really is going to assist the country, we must make sure that we do not leave anybody behind. Young people in the rural areas must be given the necessary skills to can be able to ensure that they also hop on in terms of the digital migration that is currently taking place in society.
Honorable Masiko.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair Jackson, and thank you very much, Ms. Muhale, on your responses. I just want to go further on what you started in terms of your response. And you've touched a bit on the issue of COVID-19. And it's true that we are now living under the new normal. And I think, to be correct, we are now on day 123 of our national lockdown. What, in your view, is the impact of COVID-19 on young people in South Africa? And what should be the response of government to cushion young people from the adverse effects of COVID-19? Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko. Chairperson, can you hear us now? Chair? I would have to pronounce twice. It's still Lapu. The sound. Just trying to reconnect. If you want to get about 12 move. There's no problem. I'm going to look at the mean allowed chairperson. What can't hear you?
I think she can hear us.
What she can't hear us? That's why. Then no comments, Pete. Okay, that means it's her gadget. Okay, Ms. Muhale, over to you.
Thank you very much, Chair. In terms of the impact that COVID-19 would have had on young people, industry experts earlier in the year, together with the Reserve Bank, would have predicted that there would be around million jobs lost due to COVID-19. Now, when we understand this, we look at the contracting GDP, which as of late, it contracted 2%, that when the country's economy does not grow, it means that high unemployment is prevalent. And where is it prevalent? It is prevalent where, with respect to young people, because they are the highest number of people that are unemployed. And when we look at retrenchments, ordinarily in the private sector, they use what we call last in, first out, meaning that the last people to have entered the sector would have been the first people to go out. And this speaks mainly to young people. So the young people are really in the receiving end in terms of unemployment. Secondly, COVID-19 would have shown us that there is extreme inequalities in the education sector. Currently, there is a conversation around online learning and blended learning, but we see that predominantly, even within the basic education, public schools are unable to hop on in terms of online learning. It means that young people are being left behind and are not going to be able to get the skills to respond to some of the economic needs that are there. It becomes very important when we need to respond to the question of unemployment. And thirdly, in terms of the social aspect of things, earlier during the lockdown, the Minister of Police would have reported that around the very first few days, maybe 5 or 10 days, they would have received over 2,300 phone calls that were speaking to gender-based violence, meaning that young people are in a situation where they are unsafe because they are in homes with perpetrators of gender-based violence and therefore are really in a vulnerable situation. Now, what is it that we can be able to do to ensure that we help young people and we get them out of this space? Number one, also, even during the process of COVID-19, there needs to be rapid response and aggressive response in terms of getting young people into the manufacturing sector. And I'm going to say this and qualify it by saying the African Continental Free Trade Area, who the SG is from South Africa, is going to open up Africa to combined GDP of around $3 trillion. This means that young people, if they go into the manufacturing sector, they're able to have access to this market. Now, we need to ensure that government supports young business, youth-owned businesses, and they push young people into manufacturing so that we're able to quickly respond to the question of unemployment. And in terms of education, we have realized that the Minister of Finance would have cut around 5 billion rand with regards to education. And I think this needs to be a consideration that is made, that there must be policy proposals that we need to be able to reconsider in terms of increasing and not really cutting the budget with respect to education. There needs to be that aggressive contribution towards the education sector so that young people can get skills and can be able to enter into the job market that would be available at the time. And in terms of GBV, I really think that there needs to be a concerted effort in the police sector so that they respond rapidly to questions of gender-based violence. As an activist myself, we move around to some of these police stations, and there are rape cases that have been sitting for years and years on end that have not been responded to. And I think there needs to be a concerted effort by government to ensure that they deal with gender-based violence.
During this COVID era, Ms. Mohale, I have seen many young people commenting in social media regarding the 350 grand. And I have seen many young people fighting for food parcels. But you know, sometimes when one is watching television and seeing all these things, you ask yourself that even those young people who are earning child grant, don't you think that maybe it's time that we teach our men and our young men to take full responsibility in supporting their own children, and maybe finding other ways of ensuring that those fathers who are working must take full responsibility. Maybe there's a need to amend the law or the act. I don't know how, but I want to get it from you. But how then do we assist government to reduce the burden of taking responsibility through grants in terms of other people who don't want to take full responsibility for their own children? And do you think it's a solution? What do you think?
Thank you very much for the question. I think COVID-19 would have really defined the inequalities that are there in the country, not so far as poverty and unemployment amongst young people. And the discussion around fathers, as you would put it, that do not take care of their children becomes very important. And I think one of the salient points or that you can look into is maintenance courts. How do we empower them to ensure that those perpetrators that do not support their children are held accountable? You know, where it is possible, we ensure that those that do not support their children, we name and shame. It becomes important that if you don't support your children, people must know that you are an irresponsible person, and really you are contributing to the burden that is already there in the society. I also think that there really needs to be a concerted effort to empower people so that they're able to take responsibility. Sometimes it's not true that people really just don't want to take care of their children. It could be at times that they do not have means to take care of their children. And we need to be able to respond to societal challenges that people face in the main. I think it's going to be very critical that we look at it in that fashion to say, let's empower the maintenance courts. Let's ensure that those that do not support their children, they are named. We empower those that we can, whether it's through skills, whether it's through job creation, whether we push them into entrepreneurship. But we really need to be able to respond to the societal anomalies that are there. Because poverty is a reality. Unemployment is a reality. Inequality also exists. So we cannot have a discussion around people not maintaining their children without looking at the fundamental problem that is there in the economy.
Okay, thank you very much. Honorable MP, Mam Kaula.
Thank you, Chair. Gibonga, Kosasan, There is a man who normally I tire, I find a good spot. She used it, would hear the map operative, who I found the Nokurana map operative. Yes, Mufava is the highest operative. Ah, After 2 weeks, I have to my
involved in the arts, whether it's
courts, whether we have debate societies in our communities, we need to be able to ensure that there's that partnership so that we get young people active. In as far as narratives are concerned, I think there needs to be a policy position that is driven with regards to cooperatives that are youth-owned. And I do know that there is a view that between 30 to 40% must be set aside for young people. Because if young people do not have a market, then it means that whatever business it is that they go into is literally going to die within a short space of time. But also, the NYDA needs to make sure that it brings young people together who are doing different things but can be able to collaborate. So if you have young people who are in maybe the arts in terms of painting, if young people are painters and you have supported young people maybe that have owned various galleries, we need to be able to bring them together to say there's a young person who owns a gallery, there's a young person who's an artist. How can these young people collaborate? How can these young people ensure that they support one another? So in terms of cooperatives, the NYDA needs to ensure that it identifies areas of exchange in terms of the skills and expertise that various groups of young people have so that they create a market for these young people who can be able to exist and be progressive in the...
Yesterday, there was one member who was asking about patents. Was it you?
So I'm not a specialist in the area, but I do and patents.
To secure intellectual properties of young South Africans who will design things and put them in the in the public domain, and some smart people who are some of them not even being South Africans will take those property rights and register them as theirs and patent them And next time you want to use this thing and develop it, you've got to ask permission from someone who is in America to use Bush Tea Rooibos to do something, because it's patented as their product. The question is, how do you do? For instance, even with things related to music, where young people compose songs, like it happened in Mahlathini some years ago, where you play music, you can't read nor write music. Somebody at piano listen to this music, they write it down. And then they say, produced, composed by Galo, recorded by Galo, performed by Mohale. So you only get performance fees. So the songs that you compose are not yours. They belong to Galo or some other company. So it was in that context. What would you do to ensure that the young people's intellectual property does not get stolen by?
I think at the center of discussion in terms of intellectual property's access to information, because almost each and every industry has got different ways in how they do things. And I would know in institutions of higher learning, for example, they patent many of the prototypes that come from students. But at the center of it is access to information, because the minute a young person has got an idea, and perhaps this is what we neglect, that whatever idea it is that you have, you need to be able to ensure that you register it as your own. And many of these people that come in and instil intellectual property is because we'd put our ideas out there, but we would not patent them. So at the center of it is to ensure that young people have relevant information, especially in the arts. Whatever idea it is that they have, even if they are thinking of writing it down, the first thing that must come into their minds is to say, how do I protect this? Where do I go? What do I do? And how much is it going to cost me to actually protect my idea? How we're going to resolve the question of intellectual property. Because even on Facebook, I mean, there are a lot of young people that complain that they've got an idea in terms of a TV show. They go to Facebook, they write that this is what I think I want to do. And a person that just goes onto Facebook idea, they go and they patent it. And by the time a young person comes back and says, no, but this is my idea, the person actually owns the rights, because that young person who had the idea did not have the information in terms of where do they go in terms of protecting the ideas that they have. And I think the most important thing is access to information and ensuring that young people understand that they have a responsibility to protect their ideas. However small and however silly they think it might be, they need to be able to protect it, because people come in, they take advantage and they make money out of it, and young people can't come back and claim, because according to the legal status, this particular idea belongs to a Karabo who would have come from nowhere and actually stolen your idea. So I think that's how we can be able to resolve the question on intellectual property.
Yeah, and some awareness campaign. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much, Karabo. Honorable, ufuna ukwenza follow up? Okhona ukuqala ukuza umbuzo wakho. Oh, okay. Asiphe ubaba Mphithi, Honorable Mphithi.
Thanks, Chair. I just wanted it to be noted that people were saying they couldn't hear Honorable Kaula, Mam Kaula. I don't know if there was a problem with the speaker. Thank you very much, Chair. And I must say, Ms. Mohale, I'm thoroughly impressed by your contributions. And I think since we've started, you are the only person who's actually spoken about food security, which is something that a lot of people in the country are not thinking about. And it is a real, real concern and a real problem, particularly looking at how the COVID-19 outbreak has affected the effectiveness of different industries in the country, particularly agriculture. So I thought that was very important to mention. My question really is about access in regards to the NYDA, particularly in communities and areas that might not be able to find and reach the NYDA outside of connectivity and social media aspects. I'll give you an example of where I'm coming from, Sterkspruit, which is a very rural area in the Eastern Cape, where I come from, KwaXhosazana, which is literally on a mountain. And when I go home, I lose network completely when I'm there. I always, when looking at the NYDA, think of experiences of young people who don't have the benefit of being able to take a taxi or to find transport to get close to the nearest NYDA. For example, in the Sterk space, there is no NYDA, and so one would have to go to a place like PE to be able to access. So I just want you to maybe just take us through, if you are appointed as a member of the NYDA, what is the experience of a young person in an area like KwaXhosazana, who's in a rural area and has no access? What is your approach and plan to reach that young person and work with them to provide assistance and service to them? If you can take me through that. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for the question. I think in terms of getting to young people who are in the outskirts of the community, we need to be able to ensure that we partner with basic education. And I say this because almost every community has got a school in it. And if we're able to partner with basic education, it means that we're able to have access to some of these young people that are in remote areas. Now, we use outreach offices, amplify in terms of the number of outreach offices that the NYDA has. Even though they might not have structural buildings in terms of offices in nearby areas, but if you're able to get outreach officers that exist within the community, and I think maybe this is where we learn from the Department of Health, that they've got what we call community-based health workers who live within the community and are able to assist people within the community so far as the health questions are concerned. So we need to have a similar approach as the NYDA. Have outreach officers that are within the communities. Secondly, I think we can be able to learn a lot of things from young people that are inventive. I learned about a concept called Internet in a Box. Now, Internet in a Box is almost like a shared drive, but it works offline, meaning that if you don't have access to network, you are able to access to the information that is within that particular box. So we can be able to design some of these inventions and modify them to our material conditions and ensure that where young people are located, in their schools, for example, we have that type of a gadget where young people do not need data to have access to the information in the box. They do not even need network infrastructure. They don't even need to have access to the internet to can be able to have access to the information that is within that particular box. And I think these are some of the technological advances that we must be able to hop onto. The NYDA needs to be at the forefront of cutting-edge technology. And also just to add to that, we must also invest in what we call virtual offices. Of course, you mentioned an issue of network problems. But if we're able to empower these virtual offices, one, we do know that the NYDA's the website is a mobile application as well that is zero rated. Let's have an SMS line as well where young people can just drop an SMS, but at no charge to them, but can be able to have access to information as speedily as possible. It can be really helpful in that sense to say it doesn't matter whether they've got airtime, whether they don't have airtime, whether they've got network, they don't have network, they are able to access information in as so far as that which the NYDA can be able to provide them at a particular time.
Thanks. Thank you very much for that contribution. So what comes with access is innovation. And I think one of the things that are very important is that the NYDA innovates in ways that it hasn't done before. And so I would really like to pose this idealistic question and say to you, what innovations will you, as a member, if you are appointed, bring to the NYDA that are completely out of this world in the sense of upgrading and innovating the experience of young people in terms of access and innovation of the NYDA? Because ultimately, I think what we need in the NYDA, we need new ideas, ideas that are really going to break barriers and enrich, you know, young people. Because right now, young people are in, you know, if I can put it in a way, in an entanglement with unemployment. And so how are we going to innovate the NYDA to be able to break down those barriers outside of access? Access is the first point, but what are the innovations that will bring to the NYDA for the benefit of young people? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member. I think I would have mentioned the concept of virtual offices and tools, the idea of internet in a box. Now, I would like to maybe just expound on the idea of internet in a box, and so far as the virtual office is concerned. Now, the NYDA has got problems when it comes to finances. So it means they're not able to rapidly enter into all areas within the country so that they can be able to provide the services that young people need. The concept of virtual offices literally means that wherever young people are in the country, they can be able to have access to the NYDA. And we don't really need to rely on brick and mortar for young people to be able to get these services. And I think it becomes important for us to transcend the perception that in order for you to be visible, there needs to be a brick and mortar office. We need to really invest in a technology, in a digital transformation, and exist in that space. For example, Twitter, young people can have access to Twitter without data. Young people can have access to Facebook without data, right? Now if we're able to tap into such a way of thinking, then we'll be able to understand that a community outreach officer, for example, can be sitting in Gauteng, communicating directly with a young person that is sitting in Hamatibad, who has got no access to the internet. So we need to be able to ensure that some of these things, we amplify them so that we can transcend the basic idea of brick and mortar, if I can put it like that, in terms of infrastructure with regards to the NYDA office.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much,
I pick up that you've actually been involved a lot in terms of leading in young women structures, as well as advocating for the rights of young women. And I'm just reminded that of the case of Pastor Omotoso, that currently he was going on trial against her for the rape and human trafficking of young women. And I'm just thinking, what programs can the National Youth Development Agency do to raise awareness on the, you know, on young women, you know, on gender-based violence, some of these stories that you hear that some young women go there voluntarily, you know. And there's an issue of a lesser, blessed type of relationship. So what programs can the National Youth Development Agency embark on, and what types of partnerships can the NYPA embark on to raise awareness on what such issues and ensure that the young men are protected? Thank you, Honorable Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Masiko.
Thank you very much for the question. And I participate quite a lot. I'm a member of the Young Women's Desk. And some of the work that we do is to go into various communities, attend court cases. So we literally just decide, we have a plan set out to say, this week we're going to go into Liboa Homo, for example. We go to Liboa Homo Magistrate Court, and we sit in and we listen to some of the cases that that are being heard in those particular courts. Now, why do we do this? We do this so that we can be able to amplify the voices of young women who are in rural areas and do not have access to some of the fundamental basics in terms of maybe legal advice or even support. I would have attended a case in Liboa Homo where a young woman was raped, and when she arrived at the court case, there was a barrage of people that were there that were singing. You can imagine that a young woman reports a case of rape. When she's supposed to go to the court case, she arrives, there are people that are supporting the perpetrator, and she is isolated. So you can imagine what goes on through the minds of young people. Luckily, on that particular day, we then were able to support her. And I think this of the programs that the NYDA can be able to embark on, partner with various NGOs that deal with the question of gender-based violence directly, attend court cases so that you can be able to speak live. You don't just say gender-based violence is a crisis. You are able to say today we went to a magistrate court where a 14-year-old was raped, the perpetrator was let off with a 100-rand bail. Because those are the realities that young people face. So if we are able to ensure that the NYDA directly responds to some of these things, then their voices are not going to be heard. So there needs to be that concerted effort that is made by the NYDA. The NYDA also needs to build a repository in terms of getting young people who are lawyers, social workers, people who are psychiatrists, to partner with them so that even when they do attend some of these cases, they are able to offer support to the victims. Because the reality is that when you don't have money or even access to resources, your mental health in the process gets neglected. And even if young people may recover from the ordeal of rape, mentally, they are shattered and they may not be able to be active again. So this is what we always say, that what we don't realize is young people who experience rape in their lives, whether they report it or they don't report it, their lives are going to be changed for the rest of your lives, their lives. Because if you report it and you don't win the case, it means you've lost your privilege to even report the case tomorrow. Because should I report again tomorrow, they're going to say, hey, we know you. You know, every day you raise cases. But that's because of some of the structural anomalies that are there, that are prevalent in the system. That really gives perpetrators of rape measly sentences. I mean, South Africa is a rape capital in the world. These stats should be quite telling in terms of the type of responses that should be there. Even on a government level, there needs to be a concerted effort to respond to these questions. You know, people are speaking about the fact that young women at this current moment are in the center of two colliding storms. One is COVID-19. Secondly, it is gender-based violence. If it's not COVID-19 that kills them, surely a man will. And if we don't internalize this, then we would have failed young women and we would have really failed this country.
Yeah, thank you very much. In fact, you have answered one of the questions that I wanted to ask you. But it's fine, because I think we've gone overboard. Mam Kaula, something, but she's the last one.
Hello, siyabonga. Ukuthi ngaphela ama senza ama interview qinisweni. Miss Mohale.
Karabo. Check your gadget, I'm sure.
Miss Mohale. Ungithinta kuzobe buhlungu inhliziyo yami kodwa ke ayikho into esoyisho ngoba sisenkingeni yokuthi sisazokhala kanje ngoba ama-ofisi akasabalele. If mangabe manje ukuba bekuya ngami ngabe sikhuluma chairperson seminto leke yaka CGE yabo. Ngoba lento ibuyela kulento ukuthi noma singabatha thina inkinga yethu asinabo abantu abasihambela abaya emphakathini esemakhaya. Yingakho sigcina sinamakhesi amaningi. Yabona leyo ukuthi umuntu osuke ereshiwe impilo yakhe yonke iyaphela. Kufana nokuthi umuntu nje obulewe. Especially emakhaya ngonke la emadolobheni seke understandeka ukuthi umuntu uma ereshiwe areporte ekhaya kusukume nje obusho nje. Ngiyabonga mina ngcono ngikubonge but kodwa emakhaya akwenzeki ngoba kuzekuse nalento yokuthi no umakhelwane umfundisi ubaba esihlobo sami faka impupho. Yingakho ngithi ukuba kuya ngami ngabe ngithi lama-ofisi agandiswe ngoba nale crime lebhekene nabantu besifazane iningi. Ngiyabonga ama-question onke bengikubuze wona ukwazile kodwa nje ma ungeke ushintshe ngifuna hey ngoba hey wa uyabo ufika akhulume kamnandi la
ukhulume isilungu
akhulume English enkulu wenze yonke into mase sithi la
khaldololo
emakhaya sineyinkinga asayingeni leyo uyabo kuyimashini sengiyithole kuwena nonke ni la nithi jobek akukhawuteni kamteni kodwa ma uthi abalandela abantu banayida amaprovinsi abasuka kuyona enye yento nebuhlungu sasifundisintsha ukuthi abazali ma ufunda kuloo ndawo buyela kuloo ndawo yakho uyothuthukisa indawo yakini ukuze abantu labaya bakwazi ukuthi baphephe. Uyabona nje eMonti kune-youth kuyimanje ngikhuluma nani enomhlaba ifuna ukulima ngomisenza yikho awukho umnyaka angasawungqongqozanga nange usihlale uyalazi udaba ngani la kubheka ukuthi ubani wakabani ukuthi nje uthole imali kanti wena mhlawumbe ma ungena laphaya ngoba ndiyakuzwa ulimi lakho ungakwazi ukubalekelela abantu okay ngezi NYDA nikhala ngemali encane kodwa ungakwazi ukuthi niphinde nenze ikhona imali eniyitholayo out of this country amadona mhlawumbe uneke ufike uyidle leyo mali uzokwenza sure ukuthi noma uyayidla iyaya kubantu bakini abamnyama. Ngiyabonga ngithembisane
ayidle
uzobacabangela iyouth yakithi ngoba iyouth yakithi ngempela igxila ngaka kuyidakamizwa ihlale ema-tavern through imisebenzi ayikho ingekho imisebenzi banawo ama-talent bayakwazi ngisho kwenza imisebenzi eminingi ngabo bayifundele eminye imisebenzi even i-woodwork bayakwazi ukwenza i-finish yini ozobasiza ngayo. Ngiyabonga.
Thank you very much honorable members. Makhawule kufanele asiconvince thina into ye need to thina kana sizo discuss. Thank you very much Ms. Mohale for all the response and for your time and we wish you good luck.